the point is that when there's faith, conviction, so therefore one must study the Srimad Bhagavatam and of these, the Bhagavad Gita and other literatures. Otherwise, the faith will not come. Activities will not be there. Determination will not be there. Then there will be attraction for following the other stereotype affairs of the material world. Because the faith in spiritual life will be lacking. So conviction will not be there. And the living entity has to take shelter. His nature is to take shelter. So if he doesn't take shelter of Krishna, he will have to take shelter of Maya. There's no in-between. So therefore, if one is not sufficiently convinced about spiritual life, then he will not take shelter in spiritual activities. He will always be thinking, I'm missing something. I'm going to miss something. So therefore, he will always be hesitating that if I give my energy this side, oh, look what I'm going to miss on that side. Isn't it? Because anxiety will be there. Hesitation will be there. Just like if you go up to someone and you say, hey, listen, you know, give me your money, I'll invest it for you and make you lots of money. You think everyone's going to hand over their money? No. Because they have no faith in you. Their instincts tell them that you could be just a con merchant, a robber, a crook. They even had one guy, he was Trafalgar Square, he's giving out 50-pound notes, no one would take them. It's true, he went down to experiment. I think two people took one. Because they thought there's something funny going on. Even if you tried to give people, if you stood on the street now trying to give people 20-pound notes, be surprised how many wouldn't take it. Because they don't have faith. There's got to be a catch. Something's going to happen. Something's going on. Or they're forgeries, I'll get arrested. Something. Some hesitation. So that way, we can see that when people don't have faith, then they don't engage in the activity. Why is the temple not full up? Because nobody has faith. You see these devotees, they lose faith, and then they become absorbed in the stereotyped activities of the material world. These things are very important. You have to get your material life together. It's very, very important. It's very serious. Find yourself a nice wife. Settle down together. You can read Krishna book together. If you read it on your own, you fall asleep. But if you have a nice wife to read it to, then, so nice, you can hear a sweet voice of your nice wife reading the pastimes of Krishna. So that's why one becomes convinced that these things are very important. But if we look at the history of mankind, there are billions of people who got married. Billions. And have any of them got anything to show for it? You see? But Bhaktivinoda Thakur got married. So that is the nature. So Gadama Muni, even though he himself is showing us an example, at the same time, here, surprisingly, he's condemning the very thing that he's requesting from the Supreme Personality of God. Why? Because to make clear to those poor, unfortunate, foolish people who think that this type of activity is actually important. It is not important. What is important is that we get out of the material world. Whether married or not married, whether we're this or not this or that. But the most important thing is, we have to develop love for Krishna. And if you can develop love for Krishna having a wife, then you can have hundreds of wives. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, if I could make one child Krishna conscious, I would have hundreds of children. But one should also understand that these activities are very, very dangerous. They're very dangerous because the samsara, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was talking about Raghunath Das Goswami's uncles, who were both Paka Vaishnava Brahmins. Didn't eat onions, didn't eat meat, didn't take fish, didn't take tea, all their life, never broke the regular principles practically. And he said their life is like the hole where you pass stool down. You can read it, Chaitanya Charitamrita. He likened their existence as householders to the tube where you pass stool down. In India, they don't have toilets like we have. They have holes in the ground, and you just pass all the stool down that hole. And that's what Lord Chaitanya said about their household life. Imagine. The Supreme Personality of Godhead coming down and saying things like that. How dare he? How dare he come here and say things like that? We don't want to hear things like that. If he wants to speak like that, he should stay in the Vaikunthas. We don't want people coming here and speaking such harsh language. Here, Kadama Muni, beastly activities. Beastly. Beastly. That I am householder in Krishna consciousness, he sends beastly affairs. Doesn't he know it's pure devotional service, Prabhu? Why do the acharyas speak like this? Why does the great Srimad Bhagavatam speak like this? Why does the Supreme Personality of Godhead speak like this? Maybe there's a reason. Did we ever think of that? There might be a reason. The reason is because the material world is very, very dangerous. Extremely dangerous. It is like an ocean with no shore. And one can become very easily swallowed up in that ocean. So those who are serious to cross over that ocean must make precautions. Those precautions are your own individual effort to go back to home, back to Godhead. And no one can actually force you to follow any of these things, but you personally, your individual responsibility is to understand what is the necessity. What is the necessity of taking to spiritual life very, very seriously. That is your individual. Now, it may be that other people can do this, and other people can do that. But you have to look at what is the necessity. And how do you understand that? By following in the footsteps of the Mahajans. Mahajanina. The Mahayana. The Bhagavatam is saying that you follow in the footsteps of the Mahajans. And Gadama Muni is showing us that these activities are necessary. They are necessary, but they should not be given artificial importance. Artificial importance means where one becomes too much engrossed in the false conception of life, that I am this body, and that these things relating to the body are very, very important. They must be seen for what they are. Reality must be spoken. Illusion must be dispelled. Therefore, the sadhus do not speak false niceties just to keep our situation nice and happy in the material world. Rather, the sadhu means one who cuts with the sharp words of strong language the bondages to this material world. And therefore, today being the disappearance of Srila Gaurakishordas Babaji, we must pay credit to him, because Gaurakishordas Babaji was actually very, very, he was known for his very sharp tongue. He had an extremely sharp tongue and never compromised. He would always speak. I'll give you an example. Once during the rainy season, Srila Babaji Maharaj left his kutira and dwelt under the porch of a dharmshala in Navadvip. Rice prasadam was kept there for him on a hanging rope shelf. A poisonous snake slithered down the wall with the help of a rope shelf, took note of the aroma of the prasad and started to move away. Seeing the snake, an old woman came running crying, "A snake is about to bite you!" Srila Babaji Maharaj, who was blind, beat the ground with his hand and then asked, "Where is the snake? Where is the snake?" In the meantime, the serpent disappeared. The old woman exclaimed, "Oh, Babaji Maharaj, have you gone mad? That snake could have bitten you. He has just disappeared by your right side. Had you extended your right hand a fraction more to the side, you would have been bitten for sure. We cannot allow you to stay here." Hearing this, Babaji Maharaj told her, "Mother, you have inconvenienced yourself by standing here so long. You must be tired. Please don't stand there any longer." The woman replied with determination, "I shall not leave this place until you go into your room." Babaji Maharaj replied, "I am going to accept prasadam now. First I will take prasadam and then I will go into my room." The old woman continued to admonish him, saying, "That prasadam may have been touched by the lips of the snake. You cannot accept it because it is poisonous. You will die. I will bring fresh prasadam for you." Srila Babaji Maharaj then firmly stated, "I only accept prasadam that has been offered to the deity, or which I have obtained through begging, and not otherwise. I do not take food offered by materialistic people." Turning to one of Babaji Maharaj's attendants, the old woman asked, "Will you please arrange for more rice for Babaji Maharaj?" Srila Babaji Maharaj then spoke more firmly, saying, "My dear mother, if you do not leave this place, I shall not listen to anything else you have to say." Feeling rejected, the woman left. After some time, the Babaji asked the attendant, "Has she gone?" Being answered in the affirmative, he remarked, "Did you see that? How Maya is acting? How under the pretension of sympathy she tries to gain control. How she tries to gradually enter in various deceptive ways. Maya takes on various forms. She knows many tricks to cause the living entity to give up the worship of the Lord. Under different pretensions she tries to make me enter into my room, not accept prasadam and so forth. She never lets the living entity serve the Supreme Lord." Then the Paramahansa began to loudly sing the following song by Narottam Das Thakur. Gauranga Praguna Bhujiya Moinu Premaratana Dana Hilaya Harinaru Udana Yatana Kuri Dana Teyaginu Apana Karama Doshi Apini Dubinu Satsanga chadi kono asate vilas te karne lagi oye kama bandhu pas vishaya vishama visha satata kanu gaura ketan rase magana nahu keno vachaya pra kishuta paye Narottamu dasa kinu nagilo mariye. Not having worshipped the lotus feet of Lord Gauranga, I have met only ruin. I have lost the jewel of the love of Godhead due to my own negligence. I have only given attention to that which is not real wealth and abandoned that which has actual value. I have sunk within the material world by the reactions of my own karma. Having left real association, I am performing materialistic activities. I thus have become conditioned by the grasp of past karma. I have tasted the poison of material sense gratification over and over again. For this reason, I have not become absorbed in the nectar of the congregational chanting of Lord Hari. Why do I remain alive? What is my happiness? Why hasn't Narottam Das given up his life? The Paramahansa Babaji considered that the snake and the argumentative old woman were agents of the illusionary potency, come to test his determination to serve the Lord according to a strict standard. Of course, such a Vaishnava as Gaurakishordas Babaji Maharaj was never subject to material tendencies. A of any sort. It was out of humility that he taught himself liable to be seduced. He has so many stories. A married man present during Babaji Maharaj's conversation. Oh, actually, there's a newly married devotee and his wife once went to pray for the mercy of Srila Gokishodas Babaji. Maharaj introduced the husband, saying, "If you actually want to perform devotional service, then you must live separately from your wife, and thus, not depending on one another, chant the glories of the Lord." After hearing these instructions, the newlyweds did as they were advised. A few days passed, and that devotee came again to Babaji Maharaj, who had then asked, "Are you and your wife taking your foodstuffs together or separately?" The husband told him, "We are living separately and carrying on our worship, as you instructed, but we take our foodstuffs together." Babaji Maharaj then inquired, What did you have today?" The newly wedded man answered, "We had very nice vegetables and best dal and fried eggplant." Babaji Maharaj then explained, "If you only give up the external connection with your wife, that is not sufficient, because you are associating with her within. You have not been able to give up the finest foodstuffs prepared by your wife, so how will you be able to worship the Lord? Your wife is communicating with you through the medium of what she has cooked. Shame, shame. Even though you are acting as if you are chanting the Lord's holy name, still you are desiring the stems of the finest vegetables. Did you think that after someone suffering a loss of 1 lakh of rupees, he will be satisfied accepting only a handful of rice? Although he may gradually become accustomed to accepting the rice as a daily practice, still he will always think of the money he has lost. Even if one were to give such a person the most delicious foodstuffs, because he will always be anxious about what he had lost, he will not be able to put the longings for it from his heart. You have lost that which is invaluable, your devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Thus, how can you become absorbed in eating such nice foodstuffs? As for your wife, externally you are disassociating from her, yet you are maintaining attachments within. Householders may feel intimidated by Babaji Maharaj's uncompromising judgment of the above-mentioned marriage. Fortunately, he gave other instructions that resolve the problem of the material attachments and that inevitably arise within a marriage. These instructions are dealt with below. A married man present during Babaji Maharaj's conversation with the newly wedded husband inquired from the Paramahansa as follows. We see that there are many Vaishnavas living with their wives who perform devotional service to Lord Hari. Will any benefit occur to such persons? Babaji Maharaj replied, "The living entity is the eternal servant of Lord Krishna, but when the conditioned soul looks upon his wife and son, he simply sees their material forms. If one does not have the eye of devotion, one can never perceive his real identity as the eternal servant of Krishna. The bound soul always have the inclination to enjoy their wives and children. These days the living entities do not like to hear the topics of the Supreme Lord or to get the association of the Lord's devotees. If one does not attain the spiritual energy given by the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, then one will become attracted by his wife and offspring. Then, again, some persons feel detachment from their wives, children, and sense pleasures. This kind of external renunciation is like the renunciation of monkeys, who are not actually renounced, although they apparently eschew clothing, proper shelter, and other trappings of sensory emulement. The abnegation of the monkey-like renunciates, makata, vairagis, is simply a pretense. The genuine Vaishnava will never maintain an attitude of sense gratification towards his wife. Rather, he will always regard himself as a servant of Krishna and the bona fide guru. Those actually desires of performing Hari Bhajan, but in whose hearts the weeds of material desires grow, and who are unable to give up excessive attachment to wife and children, should always come and hear from the pure devotees, chant Hare Krishna, and perform congregational chanting. In this way they can quickly become detached from the inclination to enjoy their wives and children. They will gradually realize that upon completely surrenders to Krishna, then one will attain all auspiciousness. As long as one remains in bodily consciousness, one cannot obtain the mercy of Lord Krishna. The extension of bodily consciousness is seen in the affection displayed for one's wife and offspring. And yet one who leaves the association of his wife because of being thoroughly distressed in mind and continues to seek happiness for his own mind and body is not a real renunciate. The distinct feature of the renunciation of the devotee of Krishna is it's not being diverted from him in any way. A real renunciate accepts whatever is favorable for the Lord's satisfaction and rejects whatever is unfavorable. Okay, we better stop this. Any questions at all?
I was once served by some devotees that she married young. Later on, we were older, 40 or 50, my grandson was
dead. You're going to get to 40 or 50? You know, there's something there telling you you're going to reach? Are you sure you're going to reach 40 or 50? What guarantee have you got? Trikaliya, you can see future. You can see you're going to be 40 or 50. The point is that, okay, better marry young, because if you marry older, then I would say a couple like that would assume that you're going to get married. That's presumptuous, you know, to say that, you know, at 40 or 50. What a real devotee would be thinking is that I better get as much devotional service done now because I may not reach another year. It's all a question of what is the intention of the person. If the intention of devotional service means to create a material situation, then these things are very important. When I get married, who I marry to, what sort of situation, where my income, etc. But that's not to say that you shouldn't get married or shouldn't engage yourself in these things. But it is a question of what is the mentality of the devotee. Kadamba Muni was living in the forest. Okay, he's a great Muni, but he wasn't going around looking for a wife. And I think he must have been quite older at this point. Whereas Manu himself came with his daughter, his beautiful daughter, the daughter of a princess, she was the daughter of a king. But he didn't go outside his hermitage. So, that's the difference between a devotee and a non-devotee. Kadamba Muni was dependent upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who brought him a very beautiful wife. But we don't read anywhere where he decided, okay, that's enough of these austerities, I should really start looking around the villages and towns for some nice wife, and I should start making so many arrangements. So, the things that are required in life come of their own accord. They come. So many devotees who joined this movement who were worried about getting married, or were worried about this or that. There's very, very few of them who didn't do what they were aspiring to do. The point is that these things, it's like the exact same anxiety of thinking that if I don't buy some cauliflowers and potatoes today and stash them in my cupboard, there's every possibility in the morning that I could come down for breakfast, prasadam, and Ravi could turn around and say, oh, we forgot to get vegetables. You're not having any breakfast. But you could say, oh, I didn't forget. You forgot. But up in my cupboard, I got some cauliflower potatoes. Now, Krishna consciousness means dependency. It means dependency upon Krishna. If Krishna can create billions of universes and run them without any help from you, and he can feed all the occupants of those universes without any help from you, and he gave you that body without any help from you, then surely he's capable of finding you a nice little wife. Isn't it? Or would it be that Krishna would be so bewildered by your request, he'd be so confused that he would have to get all the demigods from all the universes together, all the Brahmas, to ask them, how can I find a wife for Bhakti Dev? So, if Krishna wants you to have a wife, he will get you a wife. But if you want to get yourself a wife, then you get yourself a wife. But you have to decide what is your business. If your business is looking for wives, then you should go to these clubs. Put an advert in the paper and go out hunting. Go wife hunting. There are millions and billions of women out there who, if you spend your time at it, would probably want to be your wife. Having found one of those women who want to be your wife, do you think you're going to be any happier? If you do, then you should talk to all the people who got wives. Because if you talk to all the people who've got wives, especially the ones in Krishna consciousness, you will find that most of them would love to get rid of them. And the ones who don't want to get rid of them usually are quite happy to tolerate the misery of household or life until such point as they can get out of that situation. But you will find a few who love their wives and can't think of life without them. But generally, that is rare. So, you might spend your whole time looking for a wife, and then having got that wife, you may spend your whole time trying to get rid of her. Because you think to yourself, how did I end up with this? So is it not much more better to engage yourself in serving Krishna, because that every single moment of engagement in serving Krishna will bring you eternal value. You've had wives for billions of births. If you could see on a sort of cinema picture all the wives you've had, some of them have had cockroach faces, rat's faces, dog's faces, they've been fat, they've been big, they've been small. So if you could see all of those wives in front of you, you'd probably come to the conclusion, I've had enough of this wife business. But because you can't remember all those wifeys, and you've had millions of wives, millions, billions of them. So here you have one lifetime opportunity to catch Krishna. And if you engage yourself in that activity of trying to capture Krishna, you will get eternal benefit. And even if you didn't manage it to capture Krishna, Prabhupada said the minimum you'll get is you'll go to the heavenly planets and you'll enjoy women that are millions of times beautiful than the ones here. So even if you miss Krishna by some reason, you'll still end up getting beautiful, beautiful women. Prabhupada says, so attractive that your heart will be crushed and melted. So instead of some old bag here, why not at least get some beautiful woman in the heavenly planets? Isn't it? But, yes, but, and a big but if you don't believe in the spiritual world or the heavenly planets, then you better get your act together right away, because you've only got a few years to go to get all your sense gratification in before you get too old and withered. So it's a question of faith.
And well, I was going to say something. If we did,
Who was saying all this? No, it doesn't matter. I'm just interested in it. So Andrew, who's in bright saffron, is going around explaining the dangers of not getting a wife, and you're in white. So maybe he should be wearing a white, and you should put on the saffron.
But I thought, even if, say, 40 or 50, if we were like suffering, that means I could force it to take shelter.
Whether you get married or don't get married, you're going to suffer. That thing is for sure. Even if you have 400 wives, you're going to suffer. You are not going to avoid suffering by getting a wife. And most people would say you're going to increase your suffering by getting a wife. But anyway, let's say you don't increase it. You're certainly not going to reduce it. But, having said that, my point is that Krishna can fulfill all desires. That's why we call him Govinda. And if you want a wife, Krishna will find you a nice wife. He'll even make Andrew go out and look for one for you, maybe. It looks like Andrew's pretty concerned about your marriage potentiality, so maybe he should open a dating agency for you. So that if you do get past a certain age, what age are you now? You're 28. So Andrew, keep an eye out, because you're obviously concerned. He may reach the horrible age of 30 when he's no longer married. And then between the two of you, I'm sure Krishna will provide all facilities. But I would question whether you should be wearing saffron advising people to get married, because you obviously don't know what Brahmacharya life's about. You're going to be doing it. But he's obviously picked up on it.
No, he wasn't advising us.
He was just expounding the dangers of not getting married. Anyway, any other questions?
No, it says suffering comes of its own accord.
Mm.
Does that mean that whether you are married or not married, you're going to suffer just the same way you are?
The suffering comes because of karmic activities. According to our karma, we suffer. According to our karma, we enjoy. So if you're going to do things which are going to increase your karmic situation, then obviously you're either going to enjoy more or suffer more. So getting a wife is very much part of your karma. If you get a wife who's a good wife, we call it good karma. Some people will call it bad karma. But anyway, you can call it good karma if you want. But be sure of one thing, that any activity you do will bring about a certain amount of misery and happiness. The gamble is, which activity do you do? So some people gamble and say, if I get a wife, my karma will get better. Some people get a wife and their karma gets worse. Very much worse. So life is a very big gamble. Because you don't know what's going to happen. And as devotees, we're not supposed to gamble. So in one sense, doing anything in the material world for your sense gratification is a gamble.
So it may make a difference from the point on, from whatever suffering is due to already, then you're going to get anything.
Yeah, I mean, at the same time, for one who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, then all of this karma no longer comes into play. So, if your intentions, everything is based upon intention. Just like if I send you out to do something on my behalf and you perform it purely and faithfully on my behalf, then I'm the enjoyer or sufferer of that activity. You understand? But if the intention is for you to enjoy or suffer, then that's different. So if your intention of getting a wife is, as Prabhupada to use a phrase, is to have a sex machine, then you will incur yourself a tremendous amount of bad karma. But if your intention is to genuinely serve Krishna and increase your devotion to Krishna and at the same time bring up a family, which is a material necessity, then Krishna will protect accordingly, according to how you are what is your intention? Krishna will protect you. But generally, in the material world, all these things come of their own accord. This idea that I've got to find myself a wife is bogus, because generally they come anyway. These things come. They naturally come. There's billions of people on this planet, they get married, and it all goes on. Just as much as your food comes, your sleeping comes, your mating comes. It's all connected with your material body. When you get a body, you're going to have so much eating, so much sleeping, so much sex life, and so much fearing. The moment you get a body, if you get the body of a cat, like that cat out there, you're going to spend the rest of your life climbing up lampposts and jumping over fences and chasing mice and hunting in the garden. It's determined as soon as you get your body. That cat is going to have so much eating, so much sleeping, so much mating, so much anxiety. You're going to have the same. All of these so-called adjustments you make are just your illusion. Because everything is going on the machine of karma. Prakriti kriya mahanani. That verse is very, very important, because according to prakriti, our kriya, our activities are determined. Our actions, our whole life is determined. So, some people have the karma of never getting married. Some people don't have the karma. It depends on the karma. But if you surrender to Krishna, Krishna says, I will protect you. Therefore, that is the added umbrella of the shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, which can completely nullify all your karma. So even if you are destined to have 20 wives, but because you took shelter of Krishna, you may not get any wife. Krishna wants you to have 20 wives, you may have 20 wives. But the main thing is, the main concern of the devotee is you must become determined to develop love for Krishna. Because if you haven't got love for Krishna, you're in trouble. Whether you're married, whether you're single, whether you're this or whether you're that. And that's the message of Bhagavatam. The most important thing is to chant and hear about the wonderful pastimes of the Supreme Personality. Because only by drinking the nectar of chanting and hearing the pastimes of the Lord can one forget the intoxication of material existence. Srimad Bhagavatam Apranam Ki Jai.
Say that in, so it says here about the pastime of the Lord. So I wanted to talk about that, because we discussed it the other day, how that means all the different pastimes of the Lord. But, so I'm good, but some people say that specifically to become purified from this sex desire, which is here about the pastimes, is what they say. Of Krishna, of the gopis. So therefore,
You read that?
I'm not saying that's correct. I'm just saying that someone said it. I've read that in the Krishna book, it says that.
Yeah, that's the only quote that they use. That quote in the Krishna book, Prabhupada says, that if one does hear the pastimes of Krishna and the gopis, that one can become free from sex life. Does not say to become free from sex life, that one should do it. It says that if one. It's very important phraseology, how things are phrased by Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada said it's very dangerous to think that simply by hearing about Krishna's activities with the gopis, one can somehow or other relieve his sex life. Because the danger is, you see, everything is relative in the material world. Therefore, Prabhupada says, there was one man, he was sitting in a discourse on Bhagavatam, and the reader mentioned the word. In his lecture, he mentioned the word Radharani. That man remembered that he used to have an illicit affair with a butcher's wife called Radha. So on hearing the word Radharani, he started reminiscing of that affair, which he can leave to the imagination. So Prabhupada says, by hearing about the word Radharani, he started thinking about sex life that he had with a butcher's wife. So it's obviously it didn't get rid of the sex life. So Prabhupada said the danger in the material world is that we are attached to material activities in the form of sex life. So whatever we hear about Krishna's activity in Gopi, we are attracted to it because of our attraction to sex life. We're not necessarily attracted because we're so pure that we're attracted to those. So Prabhupada says they emphasize these activities because they like to hear about sex. They like to hear about male and female interactions. And that is very dangerous. So I can show you conversations that Prabhupada states these things. There's that one quote in the Krishna book which everyone uses to somehow or other justify this sort of mentality. Of course, if one is sufficiently purified and he hears about Krishna's activities with the gopis, then, because of his pure heart, that will increase his love for Krishna million times. But at the same time, in the neophyte stage, one should not artificially try to. Prabhupada actually said to relish the pastimes of Krishna and the gopis, one should be free from all mundane sexuality. Then he can actually relish. That's why we read 9 cantos before the 10 canto. The idea of studying the 9 cantos thoroughly is so that when you reach the 10th canto, then one will be sufficiently purified to understand the activities of Krishna and the gopis and the Vrindavan. So this idea of focusing in on Krishna's activities with the gopis is not supported by the acharyas, from my understanding. But there are people who say that one should seek out these particular intimate activities. I never myself have Prabhupada talk about them. Therefore, I am very skeptical of this kind of philosophy. Mean that the spiritual master, because he's in the mood of the gopis, therefore that makes you a gopi? Where's the, I don't understand. It's like saying, if you read about President Clinton, you become President Clinton. So hearing about the mood of the spiritual master doesn't mean that you become a spiritual master. You are the servant of the servant, a million times removed from the spiritual master. So if the spiritual master is in the mood of the gopis, which none of us dispute, that doesn't mean that that makes you eligible to be privy to the intimate pastimes of Krishna on day one, or day two, or even day 50, 100 million. You can only be qualified when you're actually sufficiently purified in your heart. It's not a question that just because some prayers have certain references that makes you qualified. I don't understand the argument like that. It's like saying, if you read about a high court judge, then immediately from day one you're going to have a high court judge.
I was saying that
Prabhupada said first desire, then desire. The so-called eagerness. You have to be careful. What is this eagerness? The eagerness is there because someone feels that they are qualified to get something. If you feel, just like Prabhupada said, they're always There's so much talk about Lord Chaitanya, how he was always in the mood of the gopis and separation of Krishna. But they don't actually focus in on what Krishna, or Lord Chaitanya said, I am such a fool. I am such a rascal that my Guru Maharaj told me to constantly chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. We never see what Lord Chaitanya said. My Guru Maharaj told me to immediately dive into the activities of Krishna and the gopis. And Lord Chaitanya himself never discussed, even with Sanatana, Rupa Goswami, or these great acharyas, he never discussed the infinite confidence you passed on to Krishna and the gopis. Prabhupada never discussed it. I don't care if 500 million people are saying that we should discuss it. My Guru Maharaj didn't discuss it. I'm not going to discuss it. So therefore, if they know something more, or they have some privy to some intimate revelations, if you go through all of the lectures of Prabhupada, Radharani's appearance day, Lalita Shakti's appearance day, you'll never find them talking about intimate pastimes from Krishna and gopis. So it seems obvious that Prabhupada wanted to free us from sex life, and I'm sure Prabhupada did. And I'm sure Prabhupada wanted us to become pure. But why did he not constantly tell us about the intimate pastimes? From day one. He didn't. So therefore, follow the acharyas, not interpretations of some sort of Prabhupada. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai.